Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigative researcher, most importantly, my son Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report. I want to welcome listeners from all across the United States and worldwide to tonight's edition. It just happens to be our 1,000th, well, episode number 1,000 tonight on our format. And now we don't keep track. It just happened that we found out about this yesterday, and sure enough, here it is. Here we are. I want to thank all of our all the people who have really been supportive of us, including but not limited to Mr. Steve Quayle, who's going to be with us tonight, and also Pastor Langford. Every listener, every guest, every person.
Pastor Langford?
No, I'm sorry about that, but I mean, he's not with us tonight, but you know,
okay.
All the people who have helped us, we want to say thank you so much. Now,
absolutely.
We've got a very serious show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Quayle is coming on, and he's going to be primarily interviewing Mr. Gene Chip Tatum. Now, if you don't know who Mr. Tatum is, you're in for a real treat. Mr. Tatum really was given a one-way ticket to Cambodia back in 1971. And I say a one-way ticket. It was a suicide mission after he joined the military to become an air traffic controller, thinking perhaps that, you know, he might be able to serve our country in that capacity. Instead, he found himself in one of 13 members of the Operation Red Rock, and that was basically a suicide mission without his knowledge or consent. Now, Mr. Tatum is a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat Controller, Defense Intelligence Asset, U.S. Army Special Operations Pilot. He flew classified missions during the U.S. invasions of Grenada. Mr. Tatum also involved was in the Nixon administration's relations with China, NASA Apollo program, the Iran-Contra affair, and I can go on and on and on. Folks, his list of bona fides is as long as, Dr. Dre's rap sheet or whatever, you know, think of a rapper's rap sheet. But anyway, folks, what a show we have for you tonight. And we're cutting out any of the pomp and circumstance just to bring Mr. Steve Quayle and Mr. Gene Tatum on. I will just say this before we start. Portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by American Survival Wholesale, Health Masters, Survival 401k, and Renaissance Precious Metals. With that, we're going to turn it right over to Steve Quayle. Steve, welcome to tonight.
Well, Doug, congratulations on your 1,000th episode and the worldwide penetration of this show, Bringing the Truth. Now, this is kind of a special day for me because I interviewed Gene Chip Tatum a number of times in 1997, and we were talking about where the skeletons were buried. He was aware of all the his testimony that implicated, you know, standing and former U.S. presidents, plus a whole list of high government officials and others that they were involved in amazingly numerous nefarious activities, including, listen to this, assassination, blackmail, coercion, gun running, money laundering, and cocaine trafficking. Now, I was talking with Gene off the air before we went live, and I said, Gene, I haven't interviewed you in 18 years. I said, if you remember, we kind of shook the, we rattled a lot of cages, so much so that he just told me he had to get on a sport fisherman, a boat, head to Cuba, head to South America, and hang out. So it's not my intent to put him in any harm's way or risk tonight, but I think it's critical that he shares what's on his heart. By the way, he has All News Network. You'll see me posting events. I'm intimately aware with his bona fides. When we first started interviewing him years ago, let's just say this, he supplied me enough stuff that I should have written a book about his life. The point being is I'm going to bring him on right now, and we're really concerned, ladies and gentlemen, with what's going on with U.S. military military being used as human shields. So, Gene, take it away. I will speak little because I want this hour to be probably the most intense wake-up call that anybody could ever sound the alarm over. And Gene has been in this world so long. And obviously, Gene, thank you for coming on, and I'll do everything I can to help you with your all-news network. But go right into your major concern with what's happening with U.S. military being used as human shields.
Well, thanks, Doug, for having me on. And thanks, Stephen. So long. Yeah, thanks. Making me feel old, 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 and I am getting there. After all, it's been so many years since we've been on together. Listen, folks, as a young man, an absolute American patriot, all the way through my time with the United States military, hoping to defend the Constitution and defend our country against aggressors, against communism, against everything that was wrong in the world. But, you know, as I moved through the ranks and moved higher and higher as an officer in the military and started seeing things that didn't quite add up, I got concerned. And then when I was placed in as working with assassination teams and working under Oliver North and Task Force 160 and later in operational subgroups under the National Security Council, there was no doubt that things weren't adding up. We have a real problem today. And I say that because back then we talked about the New World Order and how things were falling apart. And I, as Steve had alluded to, I left in 97, and I came back for about 2 years, but then left again and came back, had been gone 9 years. I came back in 2012 with the birth of my son in South America because I needed to get him legal here. And we could talk about legalization here and the problems with immigration greatly, because I, having been down there and seeing how they move illegals into the country very easily, I've got a real insight there. But our American servicemen are my concern. When I came back, you know, I came back to get him legal. I came back to a country I didn't know. In 9 short years, the things that Bush and the cabal had placed in front of us in the OSGs had come almost to fruition. I mean, they talked about, you know, as long as they have food on the table, gas in the car, a roof over the head of the Americans, they're going to stay lay dormant, they're going to be complacent. And it's so true. And even when they took the roof off from over their heads, they stay complacent. It's so difficult for me to understand how Americans, how we can here allow what we had to just be stolen away from us. And now we're throwing our young men. I mean, look at the Iraqi war. We move over to Afghanistan, which was the supposedly war against terrorists, but more likely, and more than more likely, it's the incursion of U.S. military to protect the crops of the warlords so that it can be shipped into the America, causing the drugging of America, as one book was written years ago that probably needs to be updated because it's much more aggressive now than it has ever been. But yet our young soldiers are being killed. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, all being laid to waste for this horrible agenda and us allowing it to happen. And now, the most recent announcement by this Obama regime, I won't even call it an administration, because we need a regime change. America and the CIA are in the regime changes. Well, do it here, boys, because we need it. This regime has taken American soldiers, placed them, and embedding them in with terrorists, hoping that the Russians will bomb them, cause a casualty, and bring us one step closer to a major event. Steve, I just don't understand how people can sit and say, oh yeah. Well, I do understand, because when I was in meetings with Bush and I told Bush that I didn't understand how he could ever think that Americans would allow an American serviceman would ever turn on the U.S., he said, well, we'll take care of that. And it seems like he has.
Right. I think it's critical, too, Gene, Doug, and Joe, and to the listening audience. Both Hawk and I, for the last 5 years, have been warning that at some point the military will be abandoned, the U.S. military will be abandoned in foreign fields. Now, what Gene is concerned about, and we all should really see it for what it is, there's also another aspect to this, Gene. When the entity that heads up this regime became, the chief, decider who lives and who dies, he made the statement that he needed a private police force that was as strong as a military. You probably sat back and wondered, have you not, sir, that all of our battle-hardened, some of the brightest military men and women have been forced out, have been sold out, have been blackmailed out, or have been just basically said, if you want to live, get out. And you know what that whole world's like. So is it not conceivable, Gene? Here's a question I think that the people need to have answered. Is it not conceivable, with the U.S. military now being placed intentionally into harm's way, the escalation of World War III, and everything that we see going into place, that this would be the perfect way to get rid of a loyal constitutional military and basically have your enemy take them out and give you plausible denial? And I don't think that's too far-fetched. Do you, based on, when you used to fly helicopters into MENA, Arkansas, and seen the most powerful people in state government who would then become president, dealing drugs by, they'd make some of the drug lords in Mexico look like little leaguers. Will you address that? Because this is what we're talking about. We are talking about these guys who are, and women in the military, being put into harm's way intentionally to get rid of them.
You know, the drug lords in Mexico, South America, Colombia were nothing more than lapdogs to our politicians, our major movers and shakers here. And I can give, folks, I can give you one great example. My son, an American hero, several tours to the Middle East, a special forces instructor. That's not bad, huh? And the one thing I asked both my boys was, please don't go in the military. One went in the Army, became a Special Forces instructor. One is a doctor in the Navy. Kids never listen to parents, I'm telling you. But my son, last year, sat down with me and Dad, said, Dad, I can't do it anymore. I said, what, son? After 14 years in the military, I can't do this anymore. What can't you do, son? He said, Dad, I cannot work as a military soldier, as a professional soldier in this environment that they're creating. We can't even yell at the new recruits coming in. We can't put them under stress. Our orders are not to stress the new recruits. These are new recruits now, not new recruits out of basic training. These are new recruits who now can go through basic training, come out of their technical field, and directly into special operations. In the old days, they had to be battle-proven. They had to be proven. They had to be in their career field for a time to prove their abilities. Now, you can sign up and go straight into special operations. That's Chip, the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life, folks. That's killing the American soldier, the real American soldier. They're just putting boys out there as targets when they do that.
Yeah, I just want to say that, Chip, thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, but what we've seen under Obama is really a reality episode of Extreme Makeover Pentagon Edition, really.
No, there's no doubt. And there's no doubt where he's coming from. Look at where we're going in the world with all of our force placements. Opening bases in Somalia, private drone bases in Somalia. In South Africa, in Namibia, throughout the Muslim world, in protection, and they're not there to combat; they're there to protect. Who are they protecting down there? That's the big question.
Well, I think it behooves everyone to understand that this again Doug, I came up with a new name for him, Commandeer and Thief, not Commander-in-Chief, okay, is the fact that we're seeing now every place destabilized. And I had sent Gene an email earlier, and I think that everybody in this country, 99.9%, does not understand what's going on, because it's very simple, and this is not too simplistic, but in order to bring about Islam's savior, the Mahdi, there has to be a global conflagration. The greatest military in the world, I'm sure, Gene, you saw that the special forces, a certain branch in the army, I can't say it was special forces, although I think it was, being forced to wear red high heel shoes and to put on those birthing, vests to let a man feel what it's like to be a woman, to have to carry extra weight. Would you say, based on your, combat experience, that that will certainly cause our enemies to sit up and go, gee, we better not mess with those guys?
Well, those birthing vests could be bulletproof. Who knows?
Yeah.
Listen,
by the way,
when I was the XO of the headquarters company, 24th Infantry Division at Fort Stewart, Georgia, folks, the commander went on leave, actually went on training, I believe, as I think back. This is back in the 80s. And one of our, let me see, I think it was our arms room NCO came back off of leave and came signing in, and I got called at 3 in the morning when he signed in off leave and asked to come in by the desk sergeant. And so I came in, and the first sergeant was there, the desk sergeant was there, and the sergeant arms room NCO IC was there, and he had real long hair, and he insisted on, he had changed his name and had a surgical transformation, insisted on being billeted in the women's quarters. This had to go. I made a command decision. I said, son, get your ass into your same dorm room and go to bed. And the problem was, when he went to that dorm room, he got the crap beat out of him that night. Now, today, if that were to happen, those men who had anything to do with it would be dishonorably discharged.
Or put into prison.
Back then, that person who had the unauthorized surgery would have been dishonorably discharged for having unauthorized surgery. Today, they just say, oh, this is a transgender person, we have to allow for this. That's bull crap. They're surgically altered person. No different. Surgically altered. They're not a female. They're not a female, they're not a female. Now, there are those who biologically change themselves, or biologically are born with male and female genes, but no. Guys, everyone out there may think I'm just a horrible person for saying this, but if a man's born as a man, he's a man. If a woman's born as a woman, she's a woman, and there ain't no changing it. You can't change a Jeep to a tank.
Well, this, quote, this man's military is not your man's military. You know, Gene, I talk to a lot of military guys. What does it say to you? Now, by the way, is your son out of the military now?
He left, yes, absolutely, he left.
Good.
Couldn't handle it. Not want to handle it, because he couldn't trust these people who he was training as special operations personnel to have his back in combat.
Right.
And he's a combat veteran in this decade. Now, I'm not talking about years ago. I'm talking about 2 years ago, folks.
Right.
Your combat veterans who know what they're doing, who are combat specialists, are leaving the military in droves right now. Not only him. He talked about all of his friends leaving because they cannot trust this administration to be sure that their backs are covered. They didn't even have armor. They had to strip armor off of blown-up vehicles to give themselves armor.
does that not lend credence to the fact that they're being set up for the kill? I mean, we heard stories less than a year ago, Doug, do you remember, Joe, we talked about it on your show, where the military, obviously fighting in Iraq, couldn't even get on some of their forward operating bases and stuff. They couldn't even get food. They couldn't get medicine. It was like, you know, Gene, they were specifically being denied. I want to ask you two something. Based on all the guys that you're talking to all over the world, because we've got an hour, or, you know, we've got less than 30 minutes about, what is their number one concern right now? And if you had to just take a dart and throw it at the dartboard, based on the posturing now, we're basically in the scissors move. Well, you can say this. We're in almost a pincer-like movement. We got Russia. We got China. We're pissing off the world. And I'm sorry for that language, but it's what we're doing. And it's like we're now in a place where we can no longer fight the wars, yet it's like every day we hear something new and stupid being done to even rob whatever former defenses we have. So what's your take right now as you talk to everybody in your former world? I mean, what do they see coming down, let's say, in the next 3 months? Let's really focus in on that, because, again, you know, we've got World War III brewing, and we've got the most respected leader in the world, Vladimir Putin, standing down Ice Cream Boy. And, you know, the bottom line is that Putin plays for keeps, and you know, the entity in the White House looks for another golf game. Address that, if you would, please.
Well, I know Putin. I know him from the 80s when I was based in Germany. So yes. But in the 80s, he was more of an admin, an intelligence analyst. But he does. He does play for keeps. And the Russian people respect him for that. He's an upfront guy. I mean, if he says it's going to happen, he's going to do all that he can to make it happen. I will address this. I will say that 2 weeks ago, I met with very good, not even 2 weeks, I met with very good friends from MacDill Air Force Base. Folks, MacDill Air Force Base is the home of Special Operations Command. Okay? Yusuf. These are military commanders, lieutenant colonel and a major, who have worked their way through the ranks, who command, who have to put these special operations troops and soldiers in taskings to their bases, to their assignments around the world, and task these units to go forth and do battle in the name of the United States of America. And this is what they said to me, Chip. Yesterday, we received a tasking for 3,000 American troops to be sent to Syria. We feel that they're being embedded. We know that they'll be embedded eventually with the Syrian terrorists. And we feel that since the 30th of September, Russia's bombing campaign targets some of these rebels, and we feel that we're being used as pawns to start a war. And I said, well, don't go. Don't send them. America says don't send them. I said, I knew what their answers would be. They'd, sure, and I'll be in prison, and my family will be, you know, they have to follow their orders at that level. But that's the main concern. They're not unaware. They're very aware. At that level, they're very aware, but they have to follow their orders. They're hoping that word, that's why they came to me. We want you to get the word out. We want you to tell everyone that our soldiers are going to die. This man wants a war. He wants a major war. And I'll tell you what, folks, the first time one of our American soldiers gets bombed by a Russian bombing campaign, this president has then the support of the American people and the major media to go after, and go after big time, a new battle plan.
Are you still in contact with some of the guys you knew in the former KGB before they changed the name to FSB?
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of the accountants for the KGB is a very good friend of mine.
Moscow. What is his take? Now, let me just share this. After you and I, you know, basically parted company and you had to get away for your life and I went on to interview different people, especially after, you know, the seeming thaw between Russians, I found the Russian both agents and military guys I got a chance to talk to be incredibly forthright, you know? I mean, they not that there hasn't been propaganda, but good night. It seems like nowadays the only way you can get real truth is to go on Russia Today, and I understand what's going on. But what is his take? And if you haven't talked to him, would you talk to him for me? Because here's the deal. And by the way, if he'd go on the radio, I'd love to interview him. If he needs a voice changer, I'll make that happen. Because I don't think people understand. Vladimir Putin is a leader, but he's also warned the U.S. repeatedly, don't do it. Don't do it. We got caught provoking the whole Ukrainian crisis. You know, we're the ones that moved onto their border, not the other way around, until quid pro quo. And now with the Russian technological lead, let's face it, the Su, you're a pilot, you know that some of their advanced Sukhoi fighters are second to none in the world. As a matter of fact, they lead the world. And we can't get an F-35 to, you know, function correctly, especially since the gas masks, the high pressure helmets and their whole air system is built in China. There you go. The point is, what is your KGB accountant guy saying?
You know, I've talked to his daughter, who's a good friend, and okay. Asked her how they feel about things, but only about this recent crash.
Right.
I haven't gone into other things. I certainly can. I don't think that I talked to her because she was in Bali, and she's able to talk freely in Bali. But out of Russia, I think it's very difficult for him to, even with a voice change, speak. And he's going to speak Russian anyhow. Doesn't speak English.
Right.
Go through him. I sent his son through university, and he works for one of the major software company developers in Russia right now. So,
here's the deal. Have you ever met Lavrov, the foreign minister?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, and I'm not just name-dropping. I have a reason for asking this. The point being is that you're telling everyone, based on the high-ranking military guys, that they want the people to know that there is an intentional provocation of World War III being planned. You just made the statement, and it's true. The minute an American dies at the hands of a Russian missile or bomb, then the whole frenzy of the world. I mean, these guys are morons, okay? With the mainstream media, these are the people I'm talking about right now, in trying to whip it up. But again, let me just ask you this. Were you familiar to the degree of Islamic eschatology that there must be a World War III in order for them to bring about a global world of Islam under the Mahdi?
Well, yes, and not only under that, but under some of the Christian statutes, there must be a huge battle. So,
but here's the deal. Here's the deal. Let me ask you. Okay, what is it that you see again? I'm sorry. 90 days. Given the fact that these men are going to obey the orders, then let me go back and ask this question, because it's still, Doug and I talk about this off the air all the time. You have all the generals, you have all the admirals, you have all the hires up, you know, 4 stars and above down, talking about, you know, their oaths and stuff, and they get thrown out of the military, drummed out, and it all boils down to their pensions, and, you know, the point being, but where was the whole, if you will, where was the whole command staff, even at a Pentagon level, when they saw the total destruction of the military from a standpoint of making them ultimately the targets? If I were an admiral or a captain on an aircraft carrier, I'd be thinking real hard about, do I want to be sitting here with the newest technology? So what was it specifically? Why was it that everyone took a note, basically just disappeared? And you know, I mean, you could say, well, they worried for their family. Yes, they worried for their pensions. But wasn't there some place where, you know, where the country could have said, or the military, and I understand civilian leadership and stuff, but look, when a guy's a known communist, and you've got multiple communists, and that's a real word, and you've got people that are dedicated to the overthrow, you've got people assassinating people, why was there so much silence from the military?
Fear for their families.
Okay.
That's as basic as it gets.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to hear you say it because I'm not in the military, but that's what I'm asking. Fear for their families. So, based on Pegasus and the other stuff that you were involved in, and based on some of the most blood-lusting leadership in America at the highest levels, I mean, in essence, you either go along or we just kill everybody. Is that pretty much it?
You're with us or you're the enemy. That has always been the stand of Washington D.C. You're with us or you're the enemy. I mean, even between parties, that's the way they look at it. Republicans say you're with us or you're the enemy. Democrats say you're with us or you're the enemy. You heard her. You heard Hillary say it. Who's her enemy?
Well. Yeah, but I mean, because the Queen of Hell makes a statement, and everybody goes, "Gee, did she really break the law?" What is your feeling, okay, on the whole Benghazi thing? Everybody knows what it was about, but again, from a former Spec Ops guy, from a Black Ops guy, what you've seen, you know, are you amazed even that Congress? Obviously, we've got Trey Gowdy, and we got a few others, but it's like. I'm not kidding you. It's like the Senate and Congress have been replaced by automatons programmed by the most evil people in the world. What is your take on Hillary being able to get out from under, you know, let's just face it, she is guilty of actually breaking the laws of the land, but even Drudge had on his website the other day, too big to jail. Not too big to fail, but too big to jail. What's your take on the whole Benghazi, the Hillary, the Queen of Hell making such a passion plea or determined she's going to be the president?
Well, I can tell you that after Benghazi, I went over to Patrick Air Force Base to pick up some equipment. I buy and sell GSA equipment. We upgrade it with veterans here and then give it out to veterans coming back, some computers and so forth. So we had purchased a bunch of State Department equipment that was being sold at auction. While I was there, I met with people from DynCorp and from the State Department. This is the entity that is in charge of the shipping to Libya. How's that? So I interviewed them. And they basically said that they were fearing for their lives. Their families were fearing for the lives of their loved ones in Benghazi because of what they knew and what they were shipping there. There were two lines of shipments. They had the government line of shipment, and they had a second line of shipment authorized only by the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton's office. So, here's what was going on. Chris Stevens was there working in Benghazi before he became the ambassador. He got hold of this. He took his administrator over to Benghazi to figure out where the heck this other line of equipment, of this other line of arms was coming in from, who was in charge of it, and while he was there, he was assassinated. They didn't want him to find out. They didn't want him to find it. But the people at DynCorp know. You think they were ever interviewed? You think the people who are shipping the stuff over there were ever interviewed by Congress? No. They were interviewed by me. They feared for their lives. They feared for their families' lives. The families feared for their lives. They called over there. They called friends over there. And the friends called back here and asked for more security. Please help us. Nothing ever happened. So, what's going on here? Why is Hillary getting this get-out-of-jail-free card 2 weeks ago? Remember how haggard she looked before her hearing last week?
Absolutely.
Obama gave the orders to our Department of Justice. No matter what happens, no matter what the investigation finds, she's not to be charged. So there you go. That's done. Done deal. She's free to do whatever she wants to do. She'll be our next president, no doubt. if, and I say if, the United States exists as it is today. Now, on the other hand, if we get into a war, remember back in the old days, the word was state of emergency rather than what is it today? Military takeover, right?
Yes.
U.S. declaring the president declaring a state of emergency, thus being able to stay in office and keep command in himself. However, if he puts us under military rule, he loses command of that, and it goes under the generals. He won't put us under that. We won't go under military rule. If there is a war, same thing will happen in World War II. Elections will be suspended. He's not worried about it. He'll be president still.
So, Steve,
so do you believe he will relinquish his position and pass it off to Hillary? By the way, if you remember, there was a intense meeting with Bill Clinton, your old buddy from Mena, Arkansas, in the days on the tarmac. You know, I mean, that'll take another show to talk about that. But the point is that after that, things seemed to change because there was like a fury building or like blood, shark smelling blood in the water, and all of a sudden it cooled down. But, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, what was given by Clinton to Obama to get him to back off and back the Justice Department off? Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, I don't, but I can say that I can honestly say that Obama has no fear that if something happens to Hillary, he'll remain in office. If the war starts, he'll remain in office. He has no concerns. He knows both. There's three agendas. She'll be elected, and he'll slowly back off and collect his gold that was offered, so to speak, folks. We call it sprinkling the gold back in the old days. So he'll collect his little stipend and be happy forever. If something happens to Hillary during this term, then you know that's a different thing. If something happens to her, it's probably another state of emergency, and in America, and he can suspend elections.
And everybody you talk
will suspend elections.
Yeah, that's the question. Is it the consensus of the people you know that the elections will be suspended due to some false flags, or even we're talking World War III right now? So is that the consensus?
That's the consensus. You know, it's only a theory, but it's not a conspiracy theory. It's fact-based theory, absolute fact-based theory. That's how everyone that I know, and a lot of them are from the old days, that know how everything works, and many of them are younger crews, and they have no doubt that if Obama can get us into a state of war, he will not relinquish office. If he can't get that done before elections, if something happens to Hillary, he will cancel elections.
What about
either way he wins?
Yep. What about though the Russians doing? You know, I used to study when you and I were on the radio again. I mean, this is Doug, your 1,000th show. This is like 18 years or maybe 19 years since I've been on with Gene. The point being is that the Russians are playing for keeps now. Obviously, we've got the situation where everyone that used to be an ally of the United States is pretty much disappearing on us. The world, by the way, holds the United States and its administration in contempt. Is that a fair statement?
The whole world holds the United States in contempt. They laugh at us.
Right.
You know, living in South America, in Colombia of all countries, they laugh at the United States. Listen, Russia has solidified their position with China by going into Syria. Why, folks? The joint venture partner of the Syrian government in their national oil fields is China. So if Assad were to be ousted under this U.S. Regime change attempt, China would lose their joint venture partnership in the oil fields there. So by Russia going in, they've gained several things. First of all, they've gained a foothold over in the Middle East. as far as military installation. Second, they've solidified their position with China. Look, you can't do any better than that. If something happens to Russia, if we go after Russia, China has their back. So we're not talking about a single hemisphere war. We're talking about a world war because China will be involved. And if China gets involved, we can't even replace the electronics in our aircraft when they go down, and they go down all the time because China builds the circuit boards. China builds the light bulbs. China builds all of our electronics. China holds all of our bonds.
That's a national security issue. Doug, do you want to chime in here?
Well, I just want to ask if, Mr. Tatum, I heard your analysis of Jade Helm, which you had spoken of before, potentially suspending elections. Can we extrapolate from your analysis that that's exactly what Jade Helm was?
We certainly can. They got the proving ground and practiced right here in old home USA, where things are going to have to come down. Yes.
All right. And the only other question I have.
And the other thing is, all those military veterans that they're seeing too that are dying by the thousands.
400,000.
Right. That's 100,000 that they don't have to be worried about, who are trained warriors.
All right.
Yep.
And the only other question I had was relative to Syria. I've done extensive writings about Syria and about the gun running operation. Would it be fair to say, a fair assessment to say, that this is the Benghazi operation was essentially Iran-Contra on steroids?
You bet. And, you know, folks, Hillary wanted and pushed for boots on the ground in Syria from the get-go. So she's very happy with this escalation. And it's funny that this escalation came after the meeting with Bill, huh?
Well, hey, would you just address that too real quick, Gene? The bottom line is you were flying helicopters in the days of Iran-Contra, but prior to that, you were involved with the governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton, in some of his maneuvers. I remember you sent me a whole, you know, list of everything that you even, I remember this statement, Steve, I got it on my nose camera on my helicopter.
Oh, yeah, Arkansas Air Force Base, where I graduated from tech school. Oh, yeah, I'll never forget it.
Yeah, you wanted to share that with people real quick, because I don't think, you know, the average person that's, let's say, just tuning into this show that hasn't been around talk radio for at least the last 25 years doesn't get the fact that we're talking about full-scale narcotic smuggling, are we not?
Absolutely, with no bottom. It was absolutely, you know, here we were, special operations. Folks, 160th Aviation are the guys you see. To bring you up to date, you saw the weird helicopter that crashed in the supposedly Osama bin Laden compound, the funny-looking helicopter. I was with that unit. Flying little birds. We had carte blanche. We were tasked under the CIA. We were formed under the CIA. None of our helicopters were in what's called TONE, U.S. Army inventory, and we flew around the country. We had the 324th Medical Battalion out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. That's where we started the 160th Aviation Group. 324th Medical Battalion went to support Honduras as humanitarian support, because under the Bolin Act, the CIA-backed rebels could no longer receive offensive military support from the United States, so they could only receive humanitarian support. So Medevac became that humanitarian support, and Medevac actually, the Medevac pilots were replaced with intelligence pilots from the 160th. So they went down, they flew their things, they would pick up coolers. I was one of them. We would pick up coolers and fly them back, have them flown back to the States. We would deliver them into various points in Honduras where C-130s, C-123s, other civilian aircraft flown into Panama and directly up to the United States. From the United States, they would be flown to different destinations. One particular instance, they were brought to us there at Fort Campbell, a cooler was, and I was asked, it was marked as medical supplies. I was asked to deliver this cooler to Arkansas, to someone in Arkansas at Little Rock Air Force Base. Okay, no problem. But I opened it. Look, having been working for the CIA for many years, I knew that General Torrijos was taken out by one of these colonels, by one of these coolers in his aircraft. It blew up his aircraft. So I opened it just to make sure that they weren't coming after me again, after my experience in Cambodia. And I found drugs and I found money in the cooler. When we got to Little Rock Air Force Base, we were met by a limo, and out of the limo came Dr. Lassiter, who actually wasn't a doctor. I think his name was John Lassiter. And his cohort, who was introduced to me, was a tall, lanky guy, and his name was Governor William Jefferson Clinton. Received the money and the cocaine. All on camera, from our nose camera, on board the Special Operations Intelligence aircraft we were flying.
How's that for a good memory, huh?
Don Lassiter. Not John, Don Lassiter.
Yep.
John Lassiter was a general friend of mine. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, and what did they try and hang you on, you know, when they basically brought charges against you?
Well, they told me unless I turned all the... In early years, Bill Colby, my handler, told me that you need to have an insurance policy. So I started collecting everything. Folks, I had the best instruments in the world. I had the best technology from our government. So I started collecting information using our technology at the time. Now, it's old technology now, you know, went on to cassette tapes and things like that, but... At least it didn't go on 8-track.
Yeah, but, that would really change you.
Yeah, but I started the insurance and collecting process. When I walked away, I was asked to. We were asked in a meeting in Jupiter Island by President Bush to take out his opponent, neutralize him. Get him out of here. I don't want Perot around. I hate the man. Get him out of here, Tatum. I said, no, sir, I'm not going to do that. And I said, as a matter of fact, I quit. And I threw my little portfolio down on the table with a security officer. I said, I'm out of here. And so I left. Within a year, I was contacted and told, if you don't turn that stuff over, we're going to arrest you and put you in prison for treason. We'll put you to death, or at least you'll spend the rest of your life underground. You guys can't do that, I said. You guys are full of crap. Well, I'll be darned if they didn't do it. Charge you with treason. It was written up in the Tampa Tribune.
Wow.
I think that's what I'm really grateful, you know, for you to be able to come on, Gene, because, again, the younger generation is absolutely, how should I say this, impervious to the truth now, okay? It's like if people didn't believe there are force fields, there certainly are, and the force of denial and ignorance continually energized by mainstream vomit brokers. By the way, I call the mainstream news media vomit brokers, okay? Because they couldn't tell the truth of their lives depended on her, they'd be assassinated. But based on where you're at right now, not meaning in Florida and stuff, but you were able to basically beat that and the attempt to whack you by, whack means kill, ladies and gentlemen, because of not only your insurance policy, but didn't you have some people in the background saying, we're not going to let this happen to our brother?
Yeah, absolutely. And it not only happened to me, it happened to others of us. While I was being held in federal prison, across the compound, I saw my old night vision goggle instructor. And I asked him, what are you doing here? He said, they paid me in cash. In other words, on our missions, when we were outside of the military, we were paid in cash, $50,000 per mission. And they paid him in counterfeit $100 bills, and they got him for having counterfeit money.
Yeah, they don't even give him the real counterfeit. They give him the counterfeit.
Yeah, they didn't even give him the super bills.
So how long were you in prison? How long did it take to get you out?
27 months before the appeals court said you can't charge this guy with this. But, you know, it took a process. It took a lot of background people and a lot of my old comrades, because they knew if it happened to me, it can certainly happen to them.
So at this point, do you have to live checking your engine compartment every day and watching who's over your shoulder? I mean, has it lessened, or is it still, you know, old memories die hard?
I've been visited since I've been here in Florida probably about 10 times by federal officers.
And basically telling you to what, keep your mouth shut?
Trying to. You know, at one point I was pulled into a fusion center in Atlanta, Georgia, when I was picking up some equipment from the GSA. They wanted me to see their fusion center. They didn't really have much to say to me other than a few stupid, you know, for interviews it was, you know, pretty sad. But I had nothing to say. My words were, I'm just here to get my equipment. That's the only thing I'd say to him. And for 2 hours of interview. When I came back into the United States last month, I was held for over an hour by Homeland Security, asking me who I met with, what my intentions are. So, yeah, I mean, they're still there. My name's still in their computer. And especially now, you know, everything's computerized. And when we tried to leave, we were held for an hour before my name was cleared in the computer to fly. So,
well, at this point, what's your intent? And Doug, I think we've only got five more minutes, but All News Network, tell the people about that, because obviously every time you email me your stories, I'm going to put them up. But the bottom line is, what do you want to achieve out of All News Network? Because again, you carry bona fides and real world experience that very few people have. I mean, at least the ones that are alive on the planet right now.
Well, in All News Network, my feeling in All News Network is I want to help bring major main media people into the real media, into what's really going on. You can't do that with throwing completely alt media stuff out there. I'm taking the major media articles and information, and I'm bringing them into All News Network, and then I'm telling them where these guys are failing, where they're not bringing the truth to the American people. That's what All News Network's about. And if I change five people from the major media in waking them up, I've done my job.
Well, again, I want to thank you for coming on and just sharing the brief issues that you've shared. But at this point, this is my last question, are you at all concerned that there will be the wrong button press and we'll go nuclear? And if you were to just guess your old, what I would call, the senses that kept you alive in Vietnam all the way through your career, what's your, if you will, tense timing? And I'm asking that for a reason, because, you know, everybody who's listening to this worldwide, with your bona fides, what is your best guess or most informed, speculation?
I'm looking at a United States spring, and I have a home in South America I'm getting ready and getting containers ready to move to. I'll be running All News Network out of South America.
And when you say spring, by March?
April.
Okay. And would you do me a favor? If something comes up, will you contact Doug Freely so we can get the news out? My website's updated 18 hours a day, but I think the American people have got to know. Is it fair to say we are on the precipice, we've crested, and it is your opinion, based on everyone you talk to, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, I'm just defining my question, that we are so very, very close. This isn't a scare tactic, it's just, hey, look, how the game is played.
We're in very critical times right now, folks, very, very critical times. And unless the American people get out in the streets and get active, it's going beyond critical. It's going nuclear.
Well, Gene, thank you so much. We'll stay in touch. Doug, thanks for letting me interview. It's kind of a treat to have an anniversary show. with a gentleman that caused a lot of ruckus and got a whole lot of people thinking differently. But, you know, Gene, sometimes, you know, it's only those 5, 10, 15, 1,000, whoever they get it, because there's a lot more that don't. So thank you. God bless you. And may your, you know, steps be not only blessed, but protected.
Thank you all. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Doug.
Amen.
Bye, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum. That was Chip Tatum, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after these short messages. You're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report here on Global Star Radio Network. Our guest tonight is Steve Quayle. First hour was with Chip Tatum. If you missed it, go back and listen when the archive is up. We're going to be coming back with Douglas McIntosh.
Yeah, Doomer Doug, as he's known, and Steve Quayle. A lot of good information past hour, a lot of great information coming the next 2 hours. Stay with us.
For our 1,000th episode, if you didn't see, episode number 1,000.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.